Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to mini episode 344 of Real Life Ghost Stories, and I have three spooky stories for you today, and the last story comes from March the 6th, 2024. And story number one comes from Jamie. Years ago, my dad owned a hotel in England. The hotel was a creepy ass place, and I could write a book of the stories. I was very young, and I can't even imagine the stuff my dad and his partner would remember. As a result of this stuff, the hotel, as well as my dad, ended up on a TV show. The episode he was on was a part of a section called A House Possessed. He was part of that section because their residence at the time was part of the hotel. It was a whole thing. The real Ed and Lorraine Warren visited, and as you can imagine, the episode was seriously exaggerated for TV. In the sense that no one really had spirits talking through them. The exorcism took days rather than just one night for dramatic effect, and it sure as hell didn't get resolved as quickly as the TV show said it did. The Anchor Inn in Haydon Bridge ended up with a small cult following that believed that it should have been made into one of the Conjuring films, but that's a bit of a stretch, I reckon. The first thing I'll talk about is the poltergeist activity. No one ever got properly hurt, but we did regularly have things thrown at us. There were times when you'd be sitting on the couch and it would feel as if someone walked past the back and kicked it as hard as they could. But the couch was against a wall. The curtains would pull open or shut throughout the day. And these are just basic though. More things happened. I had a dog called Saber when I was a toddler. It was a German Shepherd. Saber was never harmed. But he was definitely afraid of whatever the hell was going on in the house. The biggest incident with Saber was when he went missing one night. All of the hotel bar regulars were out looking for him. All of my dad and his partner's friends were out looking. Even the local police were out looking for him. It was a tight-knit community. My dad had gone to bed and his partner had stayed out all night looking for Saber. So my dad got up in the morning to prepare a room for a guest arriving that day. As he went in, he was greeted by Saber laying on the bed. This might seem like someone put him in there without saying anything, but they would have had to get the keys to the room key box from my dad and put them in his back pocket without him realizing, as well as reset the alarm on the key box. Not to mention actually getting the big German Shepherd to follow them when he knew he wasn't allowed in the corridor with the rooms. The thing that springs to mind when I think about the Anchor Inn is this guy that me and my brother always used to see. This was to the point that we weren't even bothered by it anymore and just assumed that he lived there. We were both children at the time. The less okay ones were the ones that everyone would see through the night. There were stupid things like people going to order a drink or trying to get a room who weren't there, and in the same kind of time there were the ones who would always appear in the corridor for the hotel rooms that made one of the cleaners quit her job because apparently it just stared at her one day. This one actually came up on the TV episode, but a bit more dramatized than what actually happened. They gave my dad a script for some things. So you would be sitting or laying beside someone. It would be as if they would disappear until you properly looked at them. At night, they wouldn't always reappear straight away. It would take a few seconds. There would sometimes be a dark mist at night that would block your vision completely. There was a bowling green in the garden behind the hotel bar. and on this particular day it wasn't open for use. And I asked my dad why people were out playing on it if it was closed. By the time he looked out, there was nothing there. Later on, he was checking the bowling green and there were obvious footprints and ball prints in the grass, as if a few people had been playing as recently as 10 minutes before. All access to the green was locked off. I think this one sticks with me because it's a vivid memory of me actually seeing multiple people at the same time. I used to go into the bathroom and my dad would hear me talking to somebody. When I would come out, he would ask me who I was talking to, and every time he asked, without fail, I would say, "The bathroom man." And my brother had similar encounters. Whenever we were asked what he was doing, we would always say, "Looking at the corner." My older sister's main issue was around the staircases, but that wasn't abnormal because we all had the same issues there. You know that feeling when you're walking up the stairs and it feels like you're being followed? Well, imagine that, but you could hear them walking and sometimes feel as though someone was trying to grab your legs but kept missing. Very often there would be a strange smell around the stairs too, but that was only there when you experienced the feeling of someone behind you or if you walked past the top and saw someone standing at the bottom, either looking up the stairs or away from them. All in all, the hotel was creepy as hell. In the past, it was a courthouse and the car park was a gallows. I find this story both compelling and really frustrating. Compelling because, obviously, for Jamie and his family and indeed the patrons of this hotel, you all experienced terrifying things there, from poltergeist activity to actual apparitions, you know? And yet this TV show came in and we're like, oh, this isn't quite scary enough for TV. Yeah, you're going through some shit, but sorry, we actually don't think it's good enough. So we're going to make sure that you have a script and we're going to exaggerate it and we're going to make it all demonic. I haven't seen the TV show, but this is what I'm imagining. You know, and it really annoys me because I actually think what these people are going through is enough. Like that's what's happening to them. You don't need to add demons and a 3-day exorcism into it just to make it good for TV. It's really frustrating. And I feel like it completely delegitimizes the reality of people's stories and experiences. But small rant over. It does sound like a frankly terrifying place to grow up. So, you know, first of all, poltergeist activity is wild. And feeling like somebody has kicked the back of the couch when the couch is up against the wall. How do you even explain that? And it just feels like so much was going on in terms of apparitions. So you have apparitions that would appear in the corridor where the hotel rooms were that caused one of the cleaning ladies to quit her job. Don't blame her at all. An apparition where you saw multiple people playing a game out on the bowling green. And clearly these weren't like hazy apparitions or a glimpse because you specifically went and said, "Hey, there's people out in the bowling green," when there shouldn't be. Like, that to me doesn't even sound like an apparition. It sounds like some sort of time slip, especially if they left footprints and ball prints as if they were just playing a few minutes before. There just seems to be so many things going on here, and it makes me feel like, is the energy from when it was a courthouse and the car park was a gallows, is that, you know, keeping things there or attracting things to the hotel? Because there seems to be an awful lot going on. And you know what? I'm not surprised it has a cult following. Not at all.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And story number two comes from Penelope. I want to start this off by saying that I am a pretty spiritual person. My gift was awoken after my dog Sammy passed away. I occasionally get premonition dreams, but this one is remarkably eerie. My dreams usually feel like hours, but this was over in under 45 seconds. I was at my friend's house with no idea how I got there, and I was standing at the top of the stairs. My friend said, "She's gone." I asked her who was gone, and she said, "My sister. She's gone." And then I teleported to the bottom near the basement door, and I saw my friend's mom, and I asked her if she was okay. She just looked at me with an angry face. And then I was in my school's hallway, and I saw my friend and our other friend, and they walked past me, but when I tried to say hi, they just gave me a disgusted look. When I woke up, I had this overwhelming sense of sadness, and I really thought that my friend's little sister had died. Finally, a week later, I told my mom about the dream, and she told me to not tell my friend, so I didn't. A few days later, my mom and my friend's mom were talking, and she said that they have to go to a funeral, and that another one of their family members died the night that I had the dream. But I don't know why I had that dream. What were they trying to tell me? When I don't know any of the people that died. Why was I chosen as the relator of bad news? Maybe, Penelope, another way to look at this is that you are not the relator of bad news. Because in reality, when somebody dies, you know, the family are going to find out about it anyway. And it's not like it was anything that you could have done to prevent anything, you know. It wasn't as if it was like, she's going to die on this day in a way that can be prevented. It doesn't seem to have been anything like that. I would say that rather than being the kind of relator of bad news, that perhaps you are somebody who is just more sensitive and is picking up on that energy, and therefore you were aware of the death as it was happening. And I guess sometimes there aren't any answers to those big whys, you know. Why are you more sensitive than other people? Who knows? And story number three comes from Julie. I grew up on the outskirts of a small town in an old farmhouse surrounded by fields. The closest neighbour was across the field, and you couldn't get to our house unless you knew where the dirt road turnoff was. Although you can see the major interstate from our front yard. Our house is hidden by large old trees, and we have a four-compartment shed and an old dilapidated barn on the edge of the property. The house was built in the early 1900s, but I'm not sure when exactly, and over the years the owners have added on to it. You can tell with the mismatched architectures. Now to the story. Trigger warning here, because I grew up in an abusive household. All the kids' bedrooms were upstairs, and my parents' bedroom, kitchen, living and front rooms were all on the main floor. Our kitchen has a huge wall-to-wall window looking out over the front yard and porch. One night when I was around 8 or 9, I woke up in the middle of the night because I was super thirsty and needed a drink, as well as needing to use the bathroom. As quietly as I could without waking everyone in the house up, I snuck down the hallway to the old creaky staircase, making sure to step only on the edges of the stairs so the wood didn't creak and groan and alert anyone that I was awake. We usually kept the light on in the hallway, but the rest of the house was dark. I made it to the kitchen and tiptoed to the cupboard where we kept the cups, grabbed one and started getting some water. When I was finished, I turned around and looked into our front room and saw my mom rocking in the rocking chair. Knowing I had been caught, I hurriedly drank my water, all while having a staring contest with her and waiting for whatever punishment was about to come my way. Instead, though, my mom had been crying, and when I really started focusing on her face, I noticed it was cut up and bruised, like she had been beaten. I asked if she was okay, and she just nodded and held her hand out for a hug. I didn't want to make any more noise and chance waking up my dad, So as I was walking out to the front room and towards my mom, I flipped on the light in the living room and waited the second for my eyes to adjust before noticing there was no one there. And the rocking chair was still rocking. I ran as fast as my little legs could carry me back up the stairs and into my room, jumping in bed and hiding under the blankets. I didn't care who I woke up at this point. The adrenaline flooded my body, and even if I did get in trouble, I probably wouldn't feel it anyway. As I laid there under the covers and listening for what was about to come, I just heard silence. Eventually, the adrenaline wore off and I fell asleep with nothing happening. When I woke up the next morning, or later that same day, I went downstairs and my mom was in the kitchen with her back towards me. I asked if she was all right, and when she turned to answer me, there wasn't a single scratch or bruise on her face. I guess I should have expected that since she wasn't in the rocking chair the night before, but my undeveloped brain didn't comprehend what was happening at that point in time. When I was 18 or 19, I had some family visiting from out of state, and they were staying at my parents' in the old farmhouse. I had moved out at this point, but I still lived in the same small town. I went over to visit and hang out with my cousins. One was about 11 at this point and had been asking about weird things happening around the house and the property, so we compared stories. And I told him about some of the things that had happened while I was growing up there. He got a little scared, so we stopped talking about it and started playing games and watching TV. As the night progressed, I eventually left to go home. Now, I had a hard time sleeping at night without some kind of noise in the background, so I would always put on Pandora and fall asleep to music, which is what I did that night. Sometime in the middle of the night, I woke up and I couldn't move. Yes, sleep paralysis. And I heard the TV in the most sadistic voice you could imagine. Something was saying,
"We're going to take them all. We're going to take them all. We're going to take them all."
Over and over. When I was finally able to move my arm and grab the remote, I woke up the TV from the screensaver, and on the screen it said, "Are you still listening?" But no music was currently playing. I ended up putting a comedy movie on after that and couldn't fall back asleep. I went back to my parents later that morning to see my family before they left to go home. And my older cousin said she didn't sleep very well that night and felt like something or someone was watching her while she slept. I told her about what happened on my end of town, and we both got goosebumps, as well as that intense sensation on the back of your neck when someone is standing behind you. We all left in a hurry. When I was in my mid-20s, my parents went out of town for a week and wanted me to watch the house to make sure nobody broke in and take care of the family dogs. I told them that I would go over during the day, but I was going to sleep at my own place, since I didn't feel comfortable being there alone at night. I still don't. They were fine with that, so every day after work I'd go and check on things, play with the dogs and hang out for a couple of hours before going home. One day I needed to shower after a particularly hard day at work, and I decided I would kill two birds with one stone and shower at my parents' while I was checking on the dogs and the house. Out of habit, and because I'm paranoid, I always lock the front and back door while I'm in the house, and I'll still lock the bathroom door when I'm there alone. This time was no different. While I was in the shower, I heard something knocking on the bathroom door. I thought maybe it was my brother who lived in the same town, and maybe he decided to come and check on the house and the dogs as well. I called out, "I'm almost done!" And the handle started turning. I thought this was weird. Why would he be trying to get into the bathroom when there is another one not being used? And it was a good thing I locked the door. Maybe he just didn't hear the shower running or me saying I was almost done. So I finished rinsing my hair, hurriedly dried off and got dressed, opened the door and almost tripped on one of the dogs laying in front of the bathroom door. I go look at the driveway and don't see any more cars, so I check both doors and they were both still locked. I texted my brother to see if he had come over to check on the house, and he said no, he was at work and couldn't leave city limits in the patrol car because he was a police officer at the time. The farmhouse is outside city limits and considered to be on county lines. Needless to say, I grabbed my stuff, packed up the dogs and took them to my place. I didn't go back to check on the house alone after that. Yeah, and I don't blame you. I wouldn't be going back to check on the house alone after that either. We seem to have another sort of doppelganger-esque type situation going on here. And to me, it's sort of, I don't know, it doesn't really bear thinking about. Like, what would have happened if you hadn't turned on the light and you had gone and hugged whatever was in the rocking chair? And why was her face all beaten up and bruised and cut up? I'm curious to know if you kind of knew anything about the land that the farmhouse was built on or the history of it, aside from obviously you said that the owners had added on and it was a bit higgledy-piggledy and there was different eras of additions to the particular property. I just would be curious to know, did something happen there? Or at least curious to know about the people that used to live there. But I absolutely do not blame you for not going back to that house alone. No way. And is that the same thing that tried to open the bathroom door while you were having a shower? You know, is it just one thing in the house? Or is there more than one thing? And really, the big question is, what would have happened if you had given whatever that was a hug? Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Thank you to Jamie, Penelope and Julie for sending in your stories. Remember, the last story came from March the 6th, 2024. And if you would like to send in your story, you can do so by emailing it to reallifeghoststoriespodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out the website reallifeghoststoriespodcast.com. And if you are desperate for some extra content, you can subscribe to the Patreon. That is patreon.com/reallifeghoststories, where for $5 a month or $2 a month, you get access to heaps of extra content, as well as every single main and mini episode completely ad-free. And on that note, I shall see you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.